Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Steady Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Stallion Williams.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, when we talk about a movie like this, I mean, really, was there anything else? I got Spencer Buckaroo Williams, or I don't know.
Yeah, clearly you don't.
Well, we're talking about Westerns today, not just any kind of Western. We are talking about the recent modern interpretation of the book that turned into a movie called Concrete Cowboy. So stick around as we get into that, and we'll tell you our thoughts on it. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite stream platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. I'm pretty sure you're getting tired of hearing me say it, but we got over 250 episodes over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Check it out. We had a great crossover episode with the local Sacramento comic book podcast, The Cabeless Crusaders, and had a great time with that in an awesome review of Zack Snyder's Justice League. The Snyder Cut. Whatever you want to call it, release the Snyder Cut, everything else in between. It was fun. Check us out there. Also, check us out on any place where you can stream and download podcasts, anywhere from Spotify, Pandora, Player FM, Audio Boom, iTunes, Google Play, anywhere you can pretty much get a podcast. Listen to your podcast.
Yep.
We are actually recording this episode a little later than normal, but it doesn't matter because we are still going to deliver the same awesome kind of content, and Spencer will be yelling the same kind of decibels, blowing your eardrum. So,
I mean, they're not always ear blow drumming things.
Ear blow? What?
This might be too late.
I was gonna say that's on you. That's on you. So, like we said, check us out, streaming platforms, our podcast. Also, listen to us on our website, filmlosophers.com. But we got a great show in store for you. As we mentioned, we're going to be talking about Netflix's recent release, Concrete Cowboy. This is a movie that actually is an adaptation. We'll talk about that in a second. But this is a movie that kind of took us both by surprise. We weren't really looking into seeing much about the film. But by the end of it, I mean, we both have very different opinions about where we started out with the film. So before I go into any more further, Spencer, why don't you give them that official synopsis goodness?
In this drama inspired by real-life Fletcher Street stables, 15-year-old Cole is taken to live with his estranged father, Harp, in North Philadelphia. There, he discovers the city's vibrant urban cowboy subculture, which has existed for more than 100 years, providing a safe haven for the neighborhood despite the surrounding poverty, violence, and encroachment of gentrification.
That's right, directed by Ricky Staub from a screenplay by Staub and Dan Walser. The film stars Idris Elba, Caleb McLaughlin, Gerald Jerome, Byron Bowers, Lorraine Toussaint, and Clifford Method Man Smith. As Spencer mentioned, this film is based upon the novel Ghetto Cowboy by Greg Neary, which is a fictionalization of the Fletcher Street Urban Writing Club. Unbeknownst to us, this was actually based on true information about a horse riding club in Philadelphia. So That was actually kind of a trip to learn. I was unaware, as were you, I'm assuming, Spence, unless you had that one in your back pocket and you didn't want to tell me.
No, I didn't know that, and that's why the credits where they had like slight interviews with them was jaw-dropping that was even that close to remotely true.
Speaking of which, the interviews that they had were actually with people who were in the film, but who were also real-life cowboys of Northern Philadelphia itself. So several of the actors in the film were actually cowboys, like, from Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's the other surprising thing. They did a great job.
They did. I think you mentioned it really right on the head when you said, usually people who aren't meant to be actors who are in films like this usually don't do that great of a job. Mm-hmm. not to say that they're bad actors, it's just that they're really great at the other thing that they do.
Yeah.
So they did really great in this one, surprisingly. The world premiere of this film was actually held at the Toronto International Film Festival on September 13th of 2020. Now, it actually had an earlier preset world premiere at the Telluride Film Festival. But due to COVID, that actually had to change. So obviously it moved to TIFF, which is still just as good. In October 2020, Netflix acquired distribution rights for the film for a release in 2021. So a lot of good little nuggets there about the film. But I think the biggest thing to say about the film is it actually really is an interesting film. I mean, going into the film, I had no idea. Like, this was another one of those movies where I didn't watch a trailer. I didn't see any, you know, promotional stuff for it. So it was really going to be a unique situation. As per the norm, it seems like within the last 6 months, you know, we've been getting more and more into the opportunity of going in somewhat blind. I mean, we may have an inkling here and there, but I don't know about you. I didn't see any trailers. Did you?
I saw like a 60-second clip from like a part of the movie. Not a trailer. It was just basically a part with Idris Elba and Caleb just talking inside their house. And I was like, is that a horse in the background? It was just like that bit. And I was like, okay, whatever. I'm like, I'll go see this movie. Like,
is that a horse? No, he's just happy to see him. the movie itself is kind of jarring at the beginning because you don't know if this is without prior information, like completely going in blind. You don't know if this is like some kind of interpretation of a classic tale done in a modern time, or maybe it's like a parallel or metaphor for like, or an allegory to something else. Like, oh, the horses stand for like, you know, our opportunities to, you know, be on level ground with everyone, like things like that. I don't know. I had no idea what we were getting into.
Yeah.
After starting the movie, getting to the realization that this movie is literally a cowboy movie in Philadelphia. The other side that Will Smith never told us about.
he's from West Philadelphia.
That's what I'm saying. expectations. Let's talk expectations because, to be honest, I really didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. Other than this, Netflix is kind of hit or miss when it comes to their films. Now, their series, they usually hit them out of the park. Yeah. Their elongated series that they run on their platform, they're usually pretty good. There's a lot of interesting ones. I know, you know, they're still developing a lot of new ones. They create new stuff all the time, and they're worth watching. Their comedy specials, they have probably one of the best selections of comedy specials online as we speak for streaming platforms. When it comes to original movies, I don't think Netflix really has learned that formula quite yet.
No.
Because it doesn't matter who is in the film, sometimes the movie just falls flat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the only expectation. I didn't want to think it, but I knew at the back of my mind, no matter what was going to happen in this movie, it was still a Netflix film, and I had to keep that in mind. And that's really kind of disappointing on my end because of the fact that, like, for in Netflix, you spend over a couple of millions and millions of dollars in creating new films. I think it's in the billions, I want to say.
I think so.
Because last time I checked, I believe it was supposed to be like $16 billion.
Yeah, because I know they're running a massive deficit just trying to keep up with everyone else. But, yeah.
Yeah, and for me, just on this show alone, not even talking about films I've seen personally, but on this show alone, we've reviewed several films that just were kind of like, okay. Like, and it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't want to think like that, but that's unfortunately the only expectation that I had. What about you?
With Netflix original movies?
Well, no, just in terms of expectations for this film. Okay.
For this one, I was like, oh, okay, Idris Elba and Stranger Things kid. Let's do this. Basically, it's like, okay, let's see what they can throw at the wall with this one.
Yeah, that was the other kind of interesting aspect, because we just recently reviewed King Kong versus Godzilla, which has what's her name, Millie Bobby Brown.
Yeah, 11.
11. And unfortunately, she's kind of a one-note, one-trick pony for me. No pun intended.
See, it wasn't until...
Okay.
Thank you. I'll be here all night. After the review, that I remembered the very first trailer from that movie with her in it. Where, like, what was it? It might not even been this movie. It might have been the one before. Now I'm thinking about it. But it was the one where she was at a radio.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking the same one. That's the second one.
Okay.
Where she's like kind of going back and she puts her ears to her hands and she starts crying.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like, that I think was the part where I was like, she's not going to be great in this movie, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I still stand by my statement that she should have been in jail in that third movie. But oh, well, whatever. So that was another thing, like, along with the whole Netflix thing, like, yes, I want to see these kids, you know, persevere and do the stuff like that Finn Wolfhard is doing, you know, where he's out and he's doing other movies and stuff like that. He's like the Will Smith of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Nobody outside of that really went anywhere. But you take that cast, and mind you, they are great as, you know, the Stranger Things kids. Everybody mm-hmm. knows them as the Stranger Things kids.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I don't really know if I could imagine them as anything else. And so this was one of those things where, knowing the rating and knowing him and the work he actually put into the most recent season for Stranger Things, which they were a little bit more grown, his adult voice was starting to come in, that little tween squeal was starting to show. So you got a lot of that. I really didn't know what to expect with a movie like this with such a veteran actor like Idris Elba. Mm-hmm. Like, Idris yeah. Elba is by far an incredible actor, just all the way around. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything, and I mean anything, that I've not liked. Even in The Office. When he was in The Office, did you ever see that?
I did not see that.
Oh, part. Yeah. He was the attention of all the women, and he goes, I know I have that kind of effect on women. It was great. So knowing that you were going to pair somebody like Caleb McLaughlin with Idris Elba, that was kind of one of those things where, like, I didn't want to kind of already start seeing where the pitfalls were going to be, but I had kind of an inkling in my mind. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the, that was a big concern for me too.
Yeah, I think for me, like, once the movie started going, I was like, I wonder if he can keep, if Caleb can keep up with Idris Elba, because
nobody can keep up with Idris.
I never thought, like, you know, that, Idris would, you know, be a problem in this movie. I was just wondering, you know, like, hey, can they make this, like, father-son dynamic, you know, work, right?
Yeah. And oddly enough, as we get into kind of talking about it, and obviously first impressions, it does work.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, first impressions right out of the gate. I'm like, this is Boys in the Hood meets Western Clint Eastwood movie. Like, this is straight up like that. Like, straight out of Compton with horses. This is a movie that really does conjoin, like, two unlikely genres, but it gives like precedence for why it belongs. You know, mm-hmm. It's not just like, oh, we're gonna merge, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots with My Little Pony, and there's a reason for it. Like, no. There's actual don't make that look.
I mean,
do not make that. No,
it's robots on ponies.
No,
bop.
But and they're going to be talking about how they, like, need to all be friends and how nobody should be fighting. And then
happens? A robot punches a pony. A rainbow shoots out of its head as it gets lopped off. That's what you do.
You know, the idea of Rock'em Sock'em Robots is their head's supposed to just spring, right?
Yeah, I'm whole new premise. This is my head movie that I'm making right now.
Netflix executives, are you listening? the actual indication and education, if you will, that some of the first cowboys were actually black, and not only that, but that it was derived from a name that they were, like, technically masters of in terms of their role, how the term cowboy derived from cowhand, which is what they were all doing at the time on all those plantations and so forth. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so it creates that precedence in this film. And I thought, man, I didn't really think I was going to be learning anything with this movie, but I am. What about you? What were some of your first impressions?
No, actually, that same part, I was like, I think I learned about this in school. Like, the one time I remember something.
Wait. You actually learned about that?
Yeah, like, vaguely. Like, I remember, like, a U.S. history course in, like, 10th grade-ish.
I must have missed that course, because, and I'm from Texas.
Like,
so.
This is, like, the one time, like, U.S. history actually, like, mentioned something that I actually remembered and can connect
they
with.
They didn't erase this in the history books, yes. Yeah, I don't actually, now that I've come to think of it, I don't remember at all learning about that. And which kind of sucks, because you're like, yeah, I wish I would have learned it. It would have probably been a really cool thing to have on hand, but oh well. What else? What else was some of your first impressions?
First impressions for this movie? I think the only thing that really stood out at the beginning for me is just... the whole mom doesn't know what to do and just leaves her son on a street.
That was interesting.
I was like, if you're trying to help this kid, this seems like a good way to traumatize him, kind of.
I was very much under the impression that this was child abandonment. I'm like, I don't think this is legal, but okay. I mean...
It is the father's house, but still.
Yeah, out on the street. Oh, your dad said he'll be here in 5 minutes. Peace. And it's like, she locked the doors, rolled up the windows, didn't even look at him twice, be like, I'm off to Atlantic City, and just bounced. And I that kind of, that was a little jarring in the beginning.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I didn't expect her to come back into the movie, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, same here. I was like, okay, he's there for the remainder of the movie, cool.
Yeah, but she came back. But yeah, no, those are like kind of the eye-catching things from this movie at the beginning.
And it's not like this movie has a lot of those types of jarring moments.
No.
There's a few, but they're not in the same vein as that. It's like, oh, I don't think that's legal. I don't think you can do that legally in the country. But the rest of the film, as we dive into it, like some of the things like we mentioned, so in terms of the quality of this movie, first and foremost... This movie was theater quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they put money behind this movie. When Netflix obtained the rights to it, I was not really thinking that it was going to be anything higher than what we've seen, any caliber higher than what we've seen, which I think the last one that we saw that was a pretty high caliber, but it still was kind of a funky movie was that one with Ben Affleck and Oscar Isaacs where they go and they find that money in that drug dealer's house.
Oh, yeah.
Which, that was weird. That one was a good quality movie. It just was a really bad, movie. But this movie, it was not only shot well, but the story was strong. The acting was, like, high caliber. I have to say... This probably has to be one of Netflix's best films, you know, in that top tier, if not in the top 10, at least, if not in the top 5, at least in the top 10.
Yeah, for like their own like movies that they're doing, like,
yeah.
This is up there.
Like, yeah.
I can't even think of another, like, I know it's a Netflix thing and it's better than this.
So. Yeah, like, honestly, it's in the same caliber for me as like Roma. Roma was one of those ones, that black and white film. It was so sad.
I remember being sad after that one.
It was a beautiful movie for me, and yes, it was very sad. But it was a well shot, well thought out film based around true historical events, and this movie wasn't too far off as well. The cinematography of it, the story element, the focuses, it gave a lot of context to what it is. Essentially to be not only a part of the organization of like the Fletcher Street, you know, stable group, but even trying to get out, like some of the thoughts and some of the ideas of trying to get out of the inner city part of Philadelphia and what that usually looks like. So kind of just stating it out there, this is definitely a much more unique film than what we're used to. And that's a big plus from Netflix. Talking about the actual quality, however, I have to say, biggest like MVP award for this film has to go to Caleb McLaughlin. I love Idris Elba to death. I will always like be like, he's my man crush. I will find this guy and just ask him if I could be his personal assistant for free and learn from this guy. This guy is a man's man.
I'd actually be a pretty dope opportunity.
Heck yeah. Are you kidding? You're like, yes, sir, please let me rub your feet. That kind of stuff.
Okay, that went a bit farther than
hey,
I thought.
Hey, you know what? To get close to godliness, I don't care. But no, Idris Elba is always a fantastic performer. He is always stunning. However, in this particular film, the biggest surprise and the biggest shining star is Caleb McLaughlin. His role as Cole is so surprising, I guess, is the first question. First thing I'd like to say, it's definitely a 180 from what we're used to with him in Stranger Things.
Right.
And I don't remember what his name is in Stranger Things. But either way, this movie really did give him an opportunity to stretch a little bit more outside of his comfort zone and to really kind of traverse into more unique stylings of his acting. And him kind of, I don't ever remember hearing him cuss this much in Stranger Things, but at the same time, I don't really ever see him stretch emotionally as an actor in Stranger Things. So those are all really interesting aspects to which I can say in this movie, he really stretched and it paid off, like by far, 100%. Between his emotional scenes with Idris Elba, to his responding to certain incidences that happened throughout the film, big climactic incidences, to even some of the horse riding. I don't know if it was him, but hey, kudos to Caleb because he did some stuff. And yeah, but I what do you think?
No, I think, yeah, I was kind of just blown away by him. Like, throughout this entire movie, like, this just was not what I was expecting.
No, without a doubt.
Like he was able to keep up. Like, especially those the few like father son scenes throughout the movie.
Yeah,
like, they're really good and they hit like exactly where they need to hit.
Yeah.
Like, so like a lot of this is just me being blown away. I was like, this is so good. Like, it's one of those movies. Like, by the time it got to the end, I kind of didn't really want it to be over. So. Like,
yeah, you feel like there has to be some sense of continuation of the story at the end of the film because it's just like, oh, that's it.
Especially when Caleb's asking a question, it's like, what are we gonna do now? It's like, we ride, and I'm like, that's not really an answer.
I'm like, to where? Like, just let me be the one to ask that question. To where, Idris?
And I'm just gonna say, like, when they put like the horses on the street. They look so out of place because I'm like, how are people even driving on these streets with these dang horses? Like, because like they're not like cars that are just on the street. They are just in the way all the time. And I don't know how that works.
No. And I agree 100%. They did a lot of scenes. Like, most of the scenes with the horses were done in this like little grassy fenced off area. And you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then there are scenes, like you said, when they're walking down the street, immediately I thought parade. It didn't really make sense to me. Although the last scene where you do see them like riding through the grass, yeah, and that cool. Bus scene where they're watching,
that was pretty cool.
I'm like, oh my gosh, like imagine being somewhere in Philadelphia on a bus and you're like, you see that? I would be that little kid like, oh my gosh, look at that. But I have to admit that overall, yes, Caleb McLaughlin was an outstanding gem in this film.
Mm-hmm.
That does not take away from everybody else that participated in this film.
Excuse me.
Idris Elba. Let's just say, Idris Elba plays the most non-contemporary father figure in this film. There are scenes where I'm like, they very much seem like they're going to be those father-esque, father-son-esque type conversations. And it takes a hard left from a lot of those conversations. I'm like, that's not constructive, but okay. I mean, hey, you do you. And I mean, it all ends well in the film. It all goes, you know, well. Which, by the way, if we haven't mentioned, we're sorry we didn't mention it, but we are going to be talking about spoilers. There's not really much to spoil, and we'll still leave some of the bigger parts towards the tail end, yeah. But there are going to be some parts we're going to be talking about, and this is an adaptation of a novel, so it's been available technically for a while. But seeing Idris Elba in some of those scenes and some of those really hard conversational scenes with Caleb, oh my gosh, they worked. As odd as Idris Elba was as a father figure, mm-hmm. and mind you, it's not odd like weird odd. It's just odd. He hasn't been a father to Caleb,
yeah,
ever, and so this is him trying in his own Harp way, which his name is Harp. So, you're seeing a whole different side of this particular actor's ability because, I mean, he's played fatherly figures throughout. Cinema throughout movies. I mean, if we're looking at like Pacific Rim, he played father to Mako. There's a lot of instances where Idris Elba has played that type of role. In this particular instance, he plays like a Philadelphian, born and raised, once a thug who ran the streets, now a cowboy in Philadelphia type person.
That's a real plot twist for your life right there.
Yeah. Like, you go from slinging drugs in the street to, you know, putting on, you know, horseshoes and breaking in Broncos. Like, seriously? That's a real hard left turn without having to move a couple states over, you know?
Yeah.
And the here's the really unique thing that I guess just... It didn't really... It caught me off guard, but then it began to, like, just suit well with me after the film got going. The way they talked, it wasn't exactly what you would expect from a Western. It sounded like just some folks who grew up in that part of town and how everybody talked to each other nowadays.
Yeah.
You just throw in the fact that they're also cowboys. So
the only thing that stood out to me, and I don't know why, maybe it's because on the West Coast this is not what you say, but like there was a part where someone was like, let me rap with you for a second. And I was like, I have not heard that since the 90s. I was like, is that an East Coast thing where they still do that?
It sounds That's, like it. Maybe. What was that? What were they calling everybody? Bull or bowl?
Like, B-O-U-E-L? Yeah, it said that, and I just heard boy, and I was like.
Or boil?
Bull?
I don't know what they said, but they said something all the time. Everybody from the head gangster dealer dude to, you know, Idris Elba and the cowboys. It's like, what does that mean?
So, like, I'm not sure if that's just the way that it's normally spelled, but, like, I've never seen the word spelled out like that, so I'm like...
Oh, you had your captions on, too?
Yeah, well, like, I don't even know how it turned on.
It's like Spence, we know you'll need this. It's okay.
Hey, sometimes it's helpful. You're like, wait, what do they say? It's line still up there. It's really helpful. But I just think it's one of those cases where like you use a word, but you don't really ever see it spelled. And then when you see it spelled, you're like, what the heck is
that? Well, and I don't even think it's that. I think it's like, it's just a word that they've used. Or maybe it's even like a shortened version of a full word. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It felt out of place for me, but it didn't seem like it was out of place, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know where the word came from, and I surely hadn't heard it until this movie, and I don't know anybody from Philly. So, yeah, this was one of those instances that I was like, okay, maybe I should... look up some of these words and see if they're actual things that people use, or if this is just an invented word from this particular movie. One of the other great aspects, as we'd mentioned earlier during the little tidbits about the film, was the fact that there were several of the actors who were real-life cowboys of Northern Philadelphia. The cool thing about this particular movie is at the end of it, as Spencer mentioned, there were three of them and I'm pretty sure there was more, but three of them were actually interviewed after the film finished during the credits, and they talked about kind of like the need for awareness for these particular cowboys or these particular people in Philadelphia, which I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a great way to bring awareness to what they were doing. But like, my mind was blown by these people because like, they had like multiple lines in the movie. They were like able to just deliver them like well.
And not just lines. They weren't just lines, but they were like full on emotional arcs.
Yeah.
Like take for instance, there's one of the cowboys there who is in a wheelchair.
Paris.
And his name is Paris. And some of the stuff that he really kind of lent to the film was a lot of emotional weight. Like, I don't know if he's genuinely in a wheelchair, but the stories that he gave and the lines that he delivered were like spot on, really, really good. Even the story as to like what happened, why he was in the wheelchair, that was a very jarring and real story.
I was surprised he even answered that question.
Yeah, me too. I was like, dang. And his role within the film was really kind of like, it was part of the main storyline, because, you know, you see Idris Elba's character like working on trying to rebuild a saddle for him so that he can ride again, which is really cool. And then you get instances with Isha, who is another one of the other characters who is played by a real life cowboy or cowgirl. And she's phenomenal as well. I honestly didn't know that she was a non-actor. You know, it just kind of was out of the blue. And when I saw her, I was like, oh, dang, she wasn't a part of this movie. Like she wasn't a part of the cast. She's actually a real life cowboy. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because like there was some scene with her where I was just like, you know, she really fits this part really well.
Yeah.
When I found that she was like actually like a cowgirl, I was like, oh wow, like I'm just super impressed with like these people and how they were just able to do this. Like, I don't feel like if I was thrown into a movie, I'd be that good.
Oh heck no, I would be like, line, help, somebody, help. But that's just the nature of her ability to really kind of shine in this role. I mean, her already being a real life cowboy and then her reliving it on screen, I guess it kind of makes sense,
yeah,
so to speak. But it's just her, she rocked it. The actress really rocked it in this movie. And I do hope, especially with the guy who played Paris, if there's ever an opportunity for them to re-show up in another movie, I would love to see them in something else as well, because they were just phenomenal. Like, bottom line. As well, many of the other performers, the woman who played Nessie, she was great.
Yeah, she's great.
A lot of the people, the one thing that kind of was a little hard to believe was Method Man playing a cop. It's Method Man.
I don't know what was hard to believe about that.
It's Method Man.
Said no one.
Exactly. Because I was like, oh, Method Man. Like, you used to rap about not this, but when he's like, I grew up wanting to be a police officer, I'm like, no, you didn't. No. And it was just a little kind of hard to swallow kind of information. You know, it didn't exactly make sense. But I mean, hey, you know, if it worked for the actor and the actor had fun, by all means, I'm all for it. I don't know, Method Man. The story, talking about the story itself, the story has fluidity. The story definitely delivers on its promise at the very beginning to see some sense of, I guess, redemption from Caleb. The question I have for you, though, is that expectation a little predictable, or may have been a little bit too predictable for the standard moviegoer?
Are you talking about like basically the arc of like he's done something bad and has to make up for it?
Yeah.
Like, yes, because like at a certain point in the movie, you're like, this is all gonna go sideways, and you're kind of just like waiting for that to happen. And at a certain point, like you check your watch and you're like, it's time. and it goes down.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Mufasa, it is time.
No, but like, there's a certain point in the movie where something happened, and I looked at the clock and I was like, it's
about right.
Yeah.
It's about pain 30, so something's gonna happen.
But even though the movie is predictable, that does not make it less enjoyable.
That was gonna be my next question, because a lot of times we get those instances where movies do take up that, and we kind of, you and I have talked about it off air, it does take up kind of that predictable level of you know, moving through the film. And this is one of those ones where it does, but sometimes the predictability does take away from the overall enjoyment of the film. And it happens. I mean, there's a ton of 90s movies that literally fit every bill you can think of. You know, all the same, like, kind of rom-coms, high school roms, you know, some horror, things like that. You recognize the repetitive tropes, and it's all about how it's packaged. How does it look? You know, is it, you know, is it Nintendo with Super Mario, or is it Sega with Sonic? Like, yes, they're two very entertaining things, but which one has the more beautiful package? And this is one of those instances where, yeah, I think I have to agree that even though the package is something we've seen before, the story arc is something we've seen before, I don't think it detracts from what is a very beautiful, let's be honest, a coming-of-age story. You know, for Caleb / Cole. I really like the ability to see not only the character in the film, but also the actor himself, Caleb McLaughlin. We're actually seeing him bloom and blossom on screen in becoming a more serious performer.
Yeah.
And dare I say, I'd probably have to say that he's probably given one of the better performances of all of the Stranger Things performers, because let's be honest, David Harbour in that Hellboy remake was god awful. Winona Ryder, we're not even going to go there. Finn Wolfhard,
done anything?
I mean, she shoplifted. she did.
What?
Yeah, like, you didn't
recently?
Know? Well, not recently, but still, that was her thing. She shoplifted. She okay. got in trouble for it too. She got caught. It was great, all over the news.
Wait, no, sorry. So this was after she'd become an actress?
Yeah.
Why? Like, that just sounds like you're bored and you need a thrill in your life.
I am not lying at all.
I don't think you're lying.
This was around 2016. No lie. Winona Ryder downplays her shoplifting arrest, says it wasn't what people think.
How is it not?
Oh, no. Her shoplifting was from 2001. Sorry.
Okay, there we go.
But
that
still
makes more sense.
It's much longer after her career. You know. So either way.
Sorry, it's so stupid.
And then Finn Wolfhard has done a few horror movies. He did that one movie, The Golden Finch, I think. I think he was in that one. Who knows?
And
it was an Amazon film.
Still Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, which we're still waiting for. Millie Bobby Brown, she's hit or miss. Like, I think the last great thing I saw her in was in Enola Holmes, which was actually really good. This one probably has to be one of, if not the best performances from one of the Stranger Things casts. And I mean all of them.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because you're including also veteran actors in that as well. And he nails it. Like, you see his growth. You see his ability to show a range of emotion. I mean, not to compare him to really anything else, because he is unique in himself. But I'm getting like a lot of like Will Smith vibes. Like, I'm thinking if he continues to work on it, he's going to get to a place to where he can be as good, if not even better, than possibly Will Smith. Who knows? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, as long as he doesn't like have a kid in the future and then try to force him into his movies, I feel like it'll probably turn out really well for him.
Wow. Will Smith, if you're listening, that was a dig right at your heart.
No, I think...
Oh, man.
You think Caleb's doing a great job. And
Stab him.
Like, I really want to see him in more movies.
I mean, mind you, on that topic, what was his name? Jaden Pickett Smith? That was Jada. That was Jada. What's the son's name?
Jaden.
Jaden. I was right. Jaden Pinkett or Jaden Smith.
No, you're combining his...
Oh, that's just her name. Jaden Smith.
Yes.
Okay. He did do well as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. Like it,
like when he was younger. Yeah. Younger. The puberty was not nice to him. In terms of everything. I don't know.
Also, bad scripts, man. It doesn't even matter if you're a good actor. Well, you can only do so much.
No, what also is the directing... And whoever directed him to have those little hissy fits in After Earth really kind of wanted his career to die right there and then. I'm not weak, you're weak. That whole thing was not good.
And then he evolved to have no emotions.
Truly. Yeah. Truly. So here's to hoping. Caleb, please take her advice.
Yep.
Overall, yes, the storytelling does hit some very... memorable, like some marks that you've probably seen before, but in all honesty, this is one of those movies where you have to say that the journey is better, the experience is better than the destination. I guess the journey is better than the destination, and instead of just seeing how the story was supposed to end, just enjoy the experience through it, you know. Mm-hmm. Because the writing on it is great, it is predictable, but with great performers like Idris Elba and, you know, Caleb McLaughlin and everybody else in this, it's like, yeah, this movie works. And I would definitely see this again. This is not...
Yes. I would watch it too.
It's interesting because you and I were just talking about this in terms of show ideas today. One of them was like, you know, talking about movies you would only see once. This is not a oncer. This is not a oncer. This is not a movie that I'd only see one time. I would like to see it again, just to kind of enjoy it a second time and really kind of see things that I didn't get a chance to see the first time. And to be honest with you, it's not just Idris Elba I'm going back for. The whole cast, the whole film as an experience entirely is incredible. Now, talking about some of the highlights or issues. In terms of repetitive and honestly predictable marks in this film, in terms of plot points, you kind of saw the writing on the wall when it came to the friend aptly named Smush. First off, if you're going to name somebody that, they better be hit by a falling piano. That's all I have to say. Like, there's no other reason to have a name like that. But you kind of saw what was going to happen. This was like, the you know, HBO's The Wire in like all one season in one one movie. You knew he was going to get it. Like, you knew it.
Yeah.
Now, knowing he was going to get it still caught me by surprise. Because when it happened, I was like, oh dang, he got shot. that's a no-no. And it was very, like, I don't know, you knew it was going to happen in that scene, let's just say that. And honestly, you know, obviously, that it's once you see the movie, you'll know what we're talking about. This is no spoiler territory. As soon as we get to this point, you're like, oh, that's what they were talking about. Yeah, this is what we were talking about. Like, Caleb just should have kept his eyes on the car. Like, that would have been fine. But
I don't even think that would have helped, because, like, the thing was, this guy rolls up on a bike, and I'm like, okay, they're going to talk, and then he's going to shoot. There was no talking. He's like, blah, blah.
I would have figured him, like, yo, bro, this is for our side. Boom, boom, boom. Or, like, something like that. I would have figured something like that. Like, some kind of yelling or some kind of, like, heralding to the bullets coming, like, yea, verily, here come mine bullets into thine chest. Like, I don't know.
What is this? Leonardo DiCaprio's Shakespeare, like Romeo and Juliet?
I don't know. I bite my thumb at the thumb.
I shoot my dagger at you with bullets.
But the fact that it's like, it's not even in the focused part of the film. It's in the background while you're watching Caleb look, and you just see this person on a bike come by and boom, 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 boom. And it's like, okay, that just happened.
Also, earlier in the movie, Caleb kind of proved he wasn't the best backup. So this is kind of Smush's fault.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Like, you're the one. Why would you even... I don't know. Obviously, for plot purposes, but taking him out of the car and then you just posting up by yourself in the car, that does not scream something's going to happen to me and the main character has to stay alive. Wink, wink. You know, so it's definitely one of those obvious plot points, but it is a little jarring. It's like, oh, I wasn't really looking to see somebody, you know, gunned down in the middle of the street after everything going on right now.
Yeah, that's kind of the last thing you really want. But, like, at the same time, I was like, it's kind of your fault for staying in town.
Very true. Which, yeah, that was really weird. You know, just why did he stick around after almost getting killed by the...
The guy knows and he confronted him. What?
Like, yeah. Why are you still here? What is going through your head? What about you? Were there any other issues or anything actually to highlight about the film?
For issues, really, this is kind of it for me, like what we've just talked about.
The scene?
Yeah. Yeah. And then for highlights, we've also really talked about all that. Well, mostly it comes down to the actors and how much I love them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we actually covered most of the things I really liked and the one thing I disliked about this movie.
I do have to admit, and I'm surprised, I was kind of giving you room to talk about this, but since you didn't mention it, the soundtrack to this movie is incredible. Like, the score, not the music soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like, the score of this movie by Kevin Manley or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, it's like a fusion of Western music with the cadence or rhythm of what you would expect in, like, an R&B song. Like, it evolves. It's very fusion-like. And for this movie to carry a soundtrack that not, that doesn't seem like it's pigeonholing the movie into one particular genre,
mm-hmm.
is kind of difficult to do, especially when you're dealing with like something with Netflix. There's usually not a big budget for great scores. Yeah. Usually they'll go to the back lots of like movie audio sounds and they'll just pull from there. This seems very unique to the film. And even when we were listening to it earlier, when we were trying to find a song for the beginning of the show, the soundtrack, like most of the songs that we were listening to were really, really like ominous and eerie and kind of beautiful in their own unique way.
When you're actually watching this movie, like for me at least, sometimes a soundtrack just fits so well into a movie that it is like unnoticeable to me. But, like, I notice it, but I also don't notice it at the same
time. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of, like, also a sign of a really good one, too.
Mm.
It's, like, it's just, like, it slips in like a glove.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this one was. And, like, when we were listening to it again, I was like, man, I forgot how, like, good this was. Like, even though I just watched it. Like, it's really good.
Mm-hmm. No, without a doubt. And I think you're right. You hit it right on the head when you said, you know, movies like this, when the soundtrack slips into it where it becomes like this enveloping force for the scenes itself and it doesn't detract. Like if you had this big bombastic like things like that and craziness and it would kind of overtake the scene. Mm-hmm. Then you're no longer focusing on the scene. You're now focusing on the music and hoping it'll be done by earlier. But when the music is just so beautifully like encapsulating the scene itself and you're watching it and you're listening to it at the same time. And not only does it add to the scene, but it creates the correct atmosphere or ambiance.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my gosh, this scene hits like right at that good spot where, you know, most great scenes hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's like a well-built cake or something, you know, all the layers on it that just make this beautiful. I'm not going to go into the whole Shrek parfait thing, but
what?
You know,
oh, okay, yes, sorry. It took me a second.
Ogres have layers. You know, it's a really great soundtrack, and I really intend to find more of it because we only found a few little clips here and there. So hopefully, I'll be able to find the rest of it and kind of listen into that as well. So, any other last thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
Nope.
All right. Well, wrapping this whole thing up, as we stated, this was one of the recent releases by Netflix. So we're going to go ahead and see if the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I'll go first because I know Spencer has probably a more higher opinion than I do, but that's neither here nor there. I'm just stating. Well, here's the thing. When it comes to considering all movies like this, you still have to consider it not only just against, kind of like with what we talked about with Justice League, not only do we have to reference it with other films like the previous film, but also other great films that have been created throughout history and have made their way to the cinema. So keeping that in mind, the film passes for me. It obviously, if it's the same formula and it works, why break it, right? Yeah. So the film works. The film does pass as a story element, has a beginning, middle, and end. It really does kind of create that sense of redemption arc for a coming of age story. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 4. I really think this movie was great. I really do like everything about the film. I was a little jarred about the beginning part with the mom just leaving her son. Jarred a little bit with Method Man being a cop, and then jarred a little bit with the shooting. But nevertheless, the thing is, I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't really expecting anything out of this movie. So seeing this was a little jarring for me, but it was still a great movie, great soundtrack, great performance. I give it a 4. I really liked it. And yeah, I do plan on seeing it again. What about you, Spence?
Movie passes for me as well. Has a fantastic, just, you know, cast of actors in it. For me, this movie gets a 4 too. It's really fantastic, and
especially for it being a Netflix film, by the way.
yeah, that's, you need to work on that Netflix. We shouldn't be saying that. Yeah. But it's just a good job. Like, this is what they need more of, more movies like this. And also more movies with people who are actually in the thing that they're acting of. Because if they can pull it off. If they can pull it off like these people did, I am all here for it.
100%.
That was great.
Yeah, we don't need anybody to be like, it's okay, Cole.
Look out, he's got a gun.
He is on his way. Ah.
This is just slowly devolving into Tommy Wiseau.
Either that or Goblin, or what is that? Trolls 2?
Troll 2.
And honestly, this isn't really, like I said, this isn't something new to any of us in terms of Netflix's quality of films. It is literally a shot in the dark whenever you find a great one. And this is one of those great ones. And so I really do hope that as we continue on with Netflix's ability to create unique and very original content, I really do hope to see Netflix change up their strategy a bit. I mean, if they need to literally scout out every great film from every film festival and just say they're going to pay top dollar for it, I am not opposed to that.
No.
You know, Netflix,
works for them.
For how much you charge, let's see some stuff, man. Like, the bar is set high. Let's just say this. The bar is now being set high. We're getting great stuff out of HBO Max. We're getting great stuff out of Disney Plus. And now we're starting to get great stuff out of Hulu. Like that Palm Springs movie.
Oh, that's great.
That was a great movie.
Yeah.
That was out of Hulu.
Yeah, that's also surprising.
So, I not to say that they haven't given us great stuff before, as we mentioned, Roma, all of that other stuff. But bottom line, come on, Netflix. Let's keep this ball rolling, shall we? So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmosphers. As we said, you can check us out on all our streaming platforms on Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, iTunes, Pandora, Spotify, everywhere where you can find podcasts and stream and download them, you will find us. Also, check us out on our website at filmosphers.com and on our social pages. At Filmlosophy, Facebook.com/Filmlosophers, and on Twitter and Instagram at Filmlosophy101. We'd love to hear from you there. We do hope you had a great time listening to us tonight. And like we said, Netflix is really kind of putting out some of their great stuff right now. So if you get a chance, check out that movie. Check out some of their other stuff right now as well. They got a ton of new and unique series that are out right now, not to mention the second season of Love, Death, and Robots has released. So check those out. But So that wraps out another awesome episode of The Filmosphers. So from all of us here at The Filmosphers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.